Good morning. Let's talk today about barriers to coaching. Often, as important as what a good coach does is what a good coach doesn't do. There are a number of pitfalls that even the most experienced coach might fall into that could potentially impair the effectiveness of the coaching assignment. For example, the coach needs to maintain a high level of influence in the coaching conversations, but must be careful not to attach to the conversations over time. By using the word barrier, we are referring to things that get in the way of the coaching practice. Let's talk about physical and environmental barriers first. Some barriers include things relating to the coaching environment. An example would be your room. Is your room too hot, too cold? Is it too noisy? Even lighting can distract a conversation if it is too harsh or bright, or if the room is too dimly lit. Is the room right? The type of room you can use can make a real difference in a coaching session. When you coach in the corporate environment, you will probably have less control over the room than when you coach in your own personal business premises. When coaching in a corporate environment, always ask for a private, quiet room of a reasonable size and location. It's up to you to decide if the room is an appropriate environment for coaching. If it is not, ask for another room. Is your room right for coaching? Is your room quiet enough? Number one. Are the chairs in the room comfortable but not too cozy? You want your clients to stay awake. That's number two. Number three, is the room private? Is it away from other people's hearing? Is it out of view? Does it garner confidentiality in your client? Number four, can you sit where you can see and hear your client properly? Number five, is your client happy and comfortable in this room? As you can see, the above list requires a combination of common sense and practical thinking. These are only guidelines, and a good coach can usually work effectively in less than ideal conditions. The coach's personal preference and choice will ultimately determine whether they continue coaching in a particular environment or not. Of course, coaching doesn't have to happen in a room. Other potentially wonderful environments can be found outdoors. The possibilities are endless. Let's go back to talking about the coach. Let's talk about fatigue. Some barriers relate simply to the state of the coach. Avoiding fatigue can become a problem, especially when coaching sessions are quite long, or a coach is doing many different sessions in one day. Fatigue can cause a lack of concentration, poor memory retention, lack of patience and inflexibility, just to name a few. One solution lies in scheduling a reasonable number of sessions in one day and allowing time between sessions to recuperate. For instance, a coach might schedule 4 1.5-hour sessions, leaving 15 minutes between each session. In theory, this would give the coach enough time to take a walk, have something to drink, and relax a little. In addition, the coach should schedule a break of at least 45 minutes to enable them to rejuvenate even more. A problem arises when the session runs overtime and into the time slot of the next client. This might be caused by different factors, some of which seem unavoidable. One such example can occur when it appears that a conversation can ebb and flow like a tide, and to call time might go against the flow. Maybe the client is discussing something really important to them, or maybe the coach feels that a significant issue or breakthrough is just surfacing. As much as possible, it is ultimately important for the coach to manage the time constraints of the session efficiently. Surprisingly, this is often easier in short sessions. An example of that would be 15 to 20-minute sessions. Longer sessions are 2 hours or longer. In longer sessions, it is easier to get lost in conversation and allow the time to just disappear. One solution is to keep a clock visible on the desk for both the coach and the client to see. It's best to be open about checking the time during the session. At an appropriate moment, it is usually acceptable to say something like, "Let's just check how we're doing for time here." That way the client also becomes aware of the need to finish promptly. Whatever the circumstances, the coach should do everything in their power to stay as resourceful as possible during the day. Anything that creates a sense of fatigue in the coach, such as lack of sleep, such as drinking alcohol, such as being up late the night before, is best avoided. Barriers relating to the coach's behavior and beliefs. Less obvious but possibly more harmful to the coaching process are behaviors that the coach might adopt during coaching conversations that obstruct the collaborative coaching process. These behaviors could include asking too many questions for the client to respond to, or displaying impatience when the client becomes confused or unclear. Again, practicality and common sense are needed to consider which behaviors work in coaching and which do not. Behaviors we will explore can be both subtle and damaging to the collaborative coaching conversation. As with most principles we discuss, there is no right or wrong, only results and outcomes. For example, it's not wrong to ask too many questions. It's just unlikely to produce the results that the coach wants. So, when we're coaching, we're looking to develop the following three-step process. Number one, become aware when we're doing or thinking something that is not working. Number two, acknowledge that and give it up. Let the thought go. And number three, substitute or refocus with another more effective intention or behavior. Let's talk about too much talking. For the coach, it may seem an obvious point that it is not appropriate to talk too much during the coaching conversation, but it can quite easily happen. Perhaps the coach is feeling particularly enthusiastic or energetic about a point they're making, and 10 minutes later they're still talking about it. Alternately, the client may seem reluctant to talk, and so the coach fills the silent gaps by chatting. In a collaborative coaching conversation, the client should be doing at least 70% of the talking, often more. The principles of this type of coaching rest on the client being able to explore their own thoughts and experiences in such a way that involves insight and learning. This simply isn't possible if they have to constantly listen to what the coach is saying. Instead, a good coach uses a gentle process that involves them listening, asking questions, making observations, or offering feedback. Occasionally, the coach may choose to illustrate a point they are making by telling a short story, drawing a simple diagram, whatever is appropriate. Overall, the balance of the talking will still rest with the client. Less is more. Periods of quiet are often preferable to the irrelevant ramblings of a coach who's been embarrassed by silence. For the client, silence is often a good thing. By not having to speak or listen, the client can spend time in quiet reflection on their internal thought processes. Some thoughts and feelings take time to form, and further dialogue with the coach may distract or pressurize the client's internal thinking processes. A good coach will notice when the client appears to be reflecting on thoughts and ideas. Maybe the coach is just asking a question and the answer is not obvious, or maybe the client has just made an internal connection and wants to consider it a little longer. By allowing the room to fill with silence, the coach creates time and space for the client to simply think. The following is an exercise on quiet, on just being quiet or on quietness. I'll let you look at that yourselves. Let's talk now about emotional states. Generally, a coach wants to be in a resourceful state of mind and body to be able to coach to the best of their ability. As well as being watchful of physical conditions such as general fatigue or even illness, the coach must also be careful to be in a good emotional state as well. Emotional states conducive to coaching include feeling relaxed, aware, focused, objective, even slightly detached. Emotional states unsupportive of coaching would include feeling angry, hostile, frustrated, impatient, anxious, or simply bored. Learning how to best manage your feelings and emotions within a coaching session is a priority. Different factors may challenge the coach's ability to do this, and the following may all happen to knock a coach off balance. Number one, the coaching session is interrupted by a fire alarm. Number two, you arrive for the session to find the room you wanted is double booked. Number three, people keep walking into the meeting room that you're in without knocking. Number four, you're coaching all day in the same room, it's freezing, and the drink machine is broken. In other words, both you and your client are physically uncomfortable in some way. And number five, the client begins the session by saying that they want to quit the coaching because it's just not right for them. As much as humanly possible, a coach must maintain a way of being within the session that enables effective coaching to happen. A coach's ability to listen and focus, ask the right questions, and generally encourage progress depends on their own emotional state. Whatever happens, they must respond resourcefully and calmly. Let's talk about sympathy and empathy now. We'll tackle sympathy first. Within coaching, it is important that we understand the nature of both empathy and sympathy as they can create different results. Sympathy means to share an emotion or feeling with another person so that two people experience similar emotional states at the same time. If I'm feeling sad, and then you're feeling sad. And if you feel angry, then so do I. Empathy means the ability to identify mentally with another person. In other words, if you feel sad, I can relate to that. And if you're angry, I can appreciate how you feel. Empathy does not mean that I feel what you feel, only that I can relate to how you feel. Taking on the emotions of others is something that counselors and therapists are trained to guard against because of the debilitating effects over time. A coach who continually sympathizes throughout the coaching conversation is likely to become emotionally drained. There are times when empathy is not appropriate in relating to the client's emotion. Empathy is fine in response to more typical emotions of mild frustration, annoyance, or disappointment. The risk of merely empathizing with the client is that sometimes this can appear a little cold and unsupportive. Sometimes situations and events demand a more sympathetic response. For example, a client has experienced a significant loss of some sort and is visibly upset by discussing it. For the coach to say, "I can appreciate how that must feel," might be inadequate. To objectively explore the situation or look for possible learning may not be what is needed right then. Maybe the client simply needs to know that their sadness is normal and that the coach genuinely cares in that moment. In this instance, sympathy often feels more supportive to the individual, and the coach demonstrates that they are willing to take on the experience of the client's sadness. An example would be, "Scott, that's awful. I am so sorry." When the coach takes on the client's sadness, the coach obviously becomes more personally related to the client's situation. This delicate balance rests on a combination of factors. The coach must consider what the client might want and what seems effective for the coaching at that point. Let's talk about seeking to control or dominate a conversation. Collaborative coaching is based on encouraging the client to explore their own thoughts and experiences in a way that promotes insight and learning. If a coach controls the direction or content of the conversation in a way that inhibits its natural flow, then that is counterproductive. It is important for the coach to maintain a balance between keeping the conversation focused and supporting its natural flow. So what might cause the coach to try to control the conversation? The following are all possible factors. Number one, the coach thinks they've spotted a solution to a problem and wants to lead. Number two, the coach is frustrated at the amount of time it's taking to discuss a subject. Number three, the coach thinks the client expects them to take control. Number four, the client seems unwilling to talk about an area that the coach wants them to discuss. Number five, the client has high energy enthusiasm for the topic under discussion. Number six, the coach knows a lot about the subject being discussed and wants to display this knowledge. And number seven, the coach has a naturally authoritative manner in conversation and is accustomed to leading from the front. They have a very strong personality. Again, awareness is the key to choice. By noticing when they are controlling the content, and direction of the conversation, a coach can reduce this influence immediately. The effort and energy needed to go into listening and facilitating thoughts, rather than constructing the conversation. In doing so, the potential is opened up for a natural flow of thoughts and ideas to emerge. Needing to be right. We like being right, and we don't enjoy being wrong. Some of us are better at finding out we're wrong than others. In coaching, this is recommended that any coach give up an attachment to being right. It simply gets in the way of the conversation. An attachment to being right is closely linked to our need to look good in conversation. In order to let go of an attachment to being right, we must also give up an attachment to looking good in others' eyes. Let's talk about fixing it. When a coach plays fix it, they assume that the client has a problem and it's up to them as the coach to find the answer. The coach will focus their efforts on searching for a problem in what's being said and then try to solve it. The drawbacks of this include, number one, the coach develops an inappropriate filter to listen only for problems. Number two, the coach tries to come up with solutions without the input of the client. Number three, the client can end up feeling flawed or inadequate, something of a problem case. By ignoring any temptation to find a problem and solve it, the coach helps both understanding and resolution emerge more naturally. The coach is never in the position to fix anything. The need to fix another is not the function of a coach. Let's talk about assuming that your experience is relevant. This trap is an easy one to fall into. When a coach does a lot of coaching, sometimes what a client is saying sounds just like something other clients have discussed in the past. Because the coach thinks the conversation or situation is the same, they also expect and assume other aspects of it to be the same as well. This might cause the coach to assume that the same solution or way forward would be of a benefit this time also. Please remember, every client, every situation is an individual. From this thought, the coach is too easily jumping to conclusions, assuming that they totally understand the situation or that they know what will work as a way forward. Whatever brilliant insight, question, or idea you may have had in a previous session, it could easily be irrelevant or inappropriate in this session with this client. looking for the perfect solution. Sometimes in coaching, there is the experience of a magical aha moment between the coach and the client. A fabulous idea or insight presents itself, and the perfect way forward for the client appears. Problems dissolve, blockages are cleared, and the sun comes out. For a coach, this feels great. They know that by the process of their conversation, they have really made a difference to the client. The buzz of the whole experience can be quite uplifting for the coach and also mildly addictive. In reality, these big moments are quite rare and usually occur when a coach least expects them. Certainly, trying to produce these moments will rarely work. Personal coaching is usually an ongoing process where insights and learning can emerge as much between coaching sessions as they do within them. For a coach to always produce fast or amazing results, it can distort their view of the conversation. Ultimately, the client determines the value and effectiveness of coaching. Some clients don't need amazing insights or breakthroughs to bring about big changes. They simply need support in their learning and developmental process. Let's talk about perfection is in the eye of the beholder. Sometimes the perfect solution for the client doesn't look so perfect to the coach. During the conversation, the client realizes that if he leaves his evening nursing classes 30 minutes early, he can still make it to his bowling league every evening. At this point, the client seems pleased he's found what feels like a workable compromise. The coach doesn't think that this sounds like a perfect solution. After all, the nursing qualification he's studying for is really important to his life goals. At this point, the coach has three options. One, accept the client's choice of the way forward. Two, explore the potential risks and benefits of this option further. And three, encourage the client to think of another solution. If the coach is still looking for the perfect solution, they will pursue option three and continue looking for another idea. This may cause the client to feel uncomfortable because what he believes to be a great idea is being disregarded. If the coach genuinely feels that this is a flawed idea, but simply accepts it anyway, as in option one, then they risk sharing the burden of the ultimate consequences. Maybe the client's classwork suffers, or he doesn't get that qualification that is so important to him. Bad ideas usually expose themselves very quickly when they are explored more fully. Likewise, apparently flawed ideas expose themselves as perfect by the same process of exploration. So ultimately, the client's idea appears workable. It may still not seem perfect to the coach, certainly not enough to produce lightning bolts and cries of Eureka. The point is that if the coach insists in pursuing a perfect solution, it may become a frustrating and pointless process for both parties. They may easily end up back where they started, with the client's first idea being the only practical way forward. Trying to look good in the coaching conversation. As humans, we have the need to look good in the eyes of others. In coaching, this can get in the way of an effective conversation. It gets in the way because it diverts the coach's attention from staying fully present and in this conversation. When the coach is not fully present, the following can be true. Number one, the coach's mind can be focused too much on themselves and not on the client. Number two, the coach is not truthful, open, and honest with the client as they should be. And number three, because the coach is not open and honest, they are less powerful in the conversation. By looking good, we refer to an almost subconscious tendency to maintain an appearance that we feel is in some way positive. When a coach devotes effort or energy to looking good in conversation, it distracts from the quality of their attention and the effectiveness of their coaching. a coach may do or say things in order to impress rather than to be of benefit to the client and the coaching in the, and the coaching conversation. This probably relates to ego, self-consciousness, and some instinctive reluctance to appear vulnerable to others. Within coaching, there are various pressures upon the coach to look good. In delivering the service of coaching, it follows that the client may have certain expectations of a coach: to appear to, one, have all the answers; to, two, say never or smart things; number three, have a real impact; number four, be professional and businesslike; number five, be very experienced and knowledgeable; number six, know just what to say within the conversation; and number seven, have a happy and fulfilling life free of problems or conflict. We're all human, and all of these situations can cause problems for us. Wanting to look good is not necessarily a bad thing. It's a way we have learned to cope with some of the risks and pressures of life. We might assume that the alternative to looking good is looking bad, and that feels wrong to us. Actually, the alternative to using behaviors intended to make us look good is simply to be our natural selves. A coach falling into the trap of wanting to appear knowledgeable to the client may be trying to gain credibility, or simply may enjoy appearing knowledgeable. Unfortunately, this seldom works in favor of the coach. We're now going to talk about staying present in the conversation. Anytime we increase our awareness of ourselves, our appearance, how we're sounding, we decrease our awareness of the other person. We become not present to the person and to what is happening in the coaching conversation. Staying present to what is happening requires commitment and concentration. Our reward to staying present in the coaching conversation is a better understanding of a sense of relatedness. There now follows an exercise to help you prepare yourself to always be present. I'll let you look at that on your own. Let's talk about how confusion can be powerful. Another form of the trap of looking good arises from the gentle expectation from the client that the coach has all the answers and will always know the perfect thing to say. Sometimes the most authentic and powerful thing a coach can do is to acknowledge that they are as confused by a situation as the client. At least then they can work through the facts and issues together. For the coach to pretend they understand or to take a wild guess at an answer may take the conversation in a wholly inappropriate direction. Strategizing in the conversation. This next barrier to effective coaching is a subtle form of control known as strategizing. Strategizing is what happens when the coach starts saying or doing things in order to create a certain outcome. For example, a coach may say something in order to provoke a reaction or to deliberately take an opposing view. The coach might reason that they have good intentions for playing this kind of mental chess with the client. Whatever the coach's reason for doing it, they are still strategizing. If the conversation isn't working for the coach, it probably isn't for the client either. By approaching the subject openly and directly, the coach can explore what is really happening. Maybe the client wants to talk about something completely different and has been preoccupied with that from the beginning of the session. If the coach hides what they are thinking and asks, "Let's look at our original objectives here," the client's preoccupation is likely to surface. By strategizing, the coach has avoided tackling the issue directly. The opposite of strategizing is being authentic. Being authentic means you always speak your truth. When we are authentic, we speak our truth, we say what's there, and this is not corrupted or filtered in any way. If the coach is busy strategizing, they're not fully present with the client and are not being authentic in their views. the mental effort of translating one thought into different words diverts energy from being with the client and developing the conversation naturally. It's almost as if the coach is having two conversations, one with themselves and the other with the client. The way to avoid strategizing begins with catching ourselves doing it. We need to develop an internal alarm bell for this behavior. A place to practice giving up strategizing is in normal, everyday conversation. Wherever we have an agenda for a conversation or think we know how it's going, we tend to strategize. In any encounter, when you feel yourself strategizing, give it up. You might choose to declare your hidden thought or feeling or simply just let it go. Focusing on what to do. So now that we've discussed several things a coach needs not to do during coaching sessions, here's another. There is an obvious risk in focusing on what not to do during a coaching conversation. For example, if I tell you not to think about a blue rabbit wearing sunglasses, what do you think about? You think about that blue rabbit wearing sunglasses. So a coach needs to not think about what they're not supposed to be doing. Confused? That's exactly the point. If a coach's head is full of thoughts like, now don't control the conversation, don't treat them like they're a problem, don't take on their feelings too much, obviously that's not going to work. The coach's head is then full of their own internal conversation rather than listening to the client. In addition, by focusing on what not to do, they might end up doing it. Did you ever think about a sensitive issue and say to yourself, don't say the word failure, and then find that the word failure is the only word you can think of? Within coaching, the three-step process of awareness, acknowledgement, and substitution can help to refocus thought. I'll say that again. Within coaching, the three-step process of awareness, acknowledgement, and substitution can help to refocus thought. Let's go through a bit of a summary here. Much of the skill of coaching lies in what a good coach doesn't do, as well as what they do do. Some behavior is counterproductive to the coaching process and simply gets in the way of a great conversation. Some of these are simple behaviors, like talking too much, while others relate to the coach's belief. An example of that would be a need to be right or finding the perfect solution. Once we become aware of these behavioral barriers, we're able to let them go. This follows a three-step process. 1. Become aware that we are doing or thinking something that is not working. 2. Acknowledge that, give it up, and let the thought go. 3. Substitute or refocus with another or more effective intention or behavior. The key to avoiding these barriers to effective coaching is an ability to develop an intuitive sense of when we are doing them. As I mentioned before, this begins with awareness. This includes awareness of the pitfalls, which potentially begin by you regarding this. Then develop this awareness by consciously noticing your own tendencies towards these behaviors. First, create a focus for just one of them. An example of that would be playing fix-it in your next conversation with someone who appears to have a problem. Make it your game to catch yourself doing it and then decide to give up doing it. Over time, you won't have to wonder if you're playing fix-it. Your subconscious will let you know. Intuitively, you may get a feeling or thought that you are not comfortable with the conversation. If you attend to that thought, you'll probably notice what it is that you're doing. At that point, simply acknowledge the realization, give up whatever you're doing, and move on to letting the thought go. This ends our lecture today on barriers to coaching. I'd like to encourage you to view the following supplementary forms, such as benefits of working with a coach, Are you ready to get the most out of coaching, and who, what, where, when, and why? Thank you very much, and I hope you enjoyed the lecture. If you have any questions or you want to make any comments, please go to the blog board and put them up there. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end.